freedom of speech and religion are important rights for Christians because we are called to lift up Jesus.
Finnish lawmaker Dr. Paavi Rossinen talking about her presentation at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
I have been a member of the Parliament of Finland for 27 years, but now, suddenly, I'm facing three criminal charges for sharing my deeply held beliefs based on the Bible. At the trial, the prosecutor tried to deny the core message of the Bible, the teaching of law and gospel. I defend the right to confess the Christian faith and its teaching on the human being.
You can meet and hear Dr. Paavi Rossinen at the 2022 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Every night, I dream the same dream. The nightmare begins. I did what I had to do to protect our world.
You cannot control everything, Strange. You opened the doorway between universes, and we don't know who or what will walk through it.
Wanda, what do you know about the multiverse?
Viz had his theories. He believed it was dangerous.
He was right.
Excerpts from the movie Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Turns out that when you open those doors, even in fiction, well, what lies beyond might actually be madness. Pastor Ted Geese, who's reviewed this movie, will join us to talk about, well, what is kind of the mayhem, the madness, and when it's all said and done, doesn't really advance the story of the Marvel Universe very much. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll review that movie, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, with Pastor Ted Geese. Then Dr. Thomas Winger joins us. He's president of Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. We'll discuss the gifts that Christ gives in his ascension. Then we'll look forward to Sunday morning, according to the three-year lectionary, talking with Dr. Carl Fikencher about Jesus' declaration, I have overcome the world, in John chapter 16. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Where does this movie fall in the bigger timelines of the rest of the Marvel movies?
I'll give you two answers. The short answer is it doesn't really matter. And then the long answer is that this is part of the newest wave of the Marvel films. And it comes kind of sequentially in order on the heels of like WandaVision. So this is in the aftermath of the two big Russo brothers films, the Endgame and Infinity Gauntlet film. So like these are it comes all off of the edge of that kind of stuff. This is where this is kind of going. So if you've seen WandaVision and you've seen the recent Spider-Man movie in which multiverse related stuff kind of came up, then you're pretty much in a good place for watching this. Now, from the side, coming in on the side direction on it, there's also an animated feature, like a 6-part or 8-part little episodic thing that's on Disney Plus called What If? ... And it kind of posits all of these kind of multiverse kind of variations on characters. So having seen that would also probably help you kind of figure out what's going on in this film.
You're familiar with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's a little contrivance in that kind of absurdist view of the science fiction called the infinite improbability drive. Do you remember this?
Yes, yes, yeah.
It's how they traverse space, and it leads to all sorts of absurd, especially in the in the movie version of it, all sorts of absurd realities. Is that kind of the idea that we're playing with here?
I mean, if you have that attitude coming into this film, then you're probably going to be in a better place than, you know, your average film goer, I guess. I mean, this is sort of a film that relishes in the improbability of things. Like in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I think suddenly out of nowhere, a giant whale shows up and comes plummeting to the Earth at some point, or some planet someplace. It's things, yeah, there's a lot of weird, bizarre stuff. Like, they're traversing this idea of multiverse. And you guys had a rather serious conversation about the idea behind the multiverse. We've talked about it on Issues Etc. before. And what you get then is multiple versions of yourself everywhere, multiple versions of the world everywhere, but they're all different in different kinds of ways. So as they're kind of going through one multiverse into the other multiverse into the other multiverse, kind of on a hunt for a particular MacGuffin, there's three kind of major MacGuffins in this film, you start to like interact with bizarre, weird things, like one multiverse where everybody's made out of paint, or just very strange things, and they kind of relish in that. The director of this film is Sam Raimi, and some people might know him as, you know, he's done different things. He's done like baseball movies and various kinds of other stuff, but he's probably best known for making horror films. So he did The Evil Dead, The Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness. They're on a sliding scale of seriousness in terms of like horror, but they're certainly horror films. And then he also did the first three of the Spider-Man films going back to, what was it, 2002, I guess. And those ones kind of came back into prominence just recently because of the multiverse storyline in the most recent Spider-Man movie that brought all of the different Spider-Men together into the one film. So, you know, he seems kind of like an interesting character to like an interesting director to bring in to do a film like this. So this is not the same director that did the first of the Doctor Strange movies from 2016, the Scott Dickerson. So Sam Raimi seems like he'd be a great person to bring in for this kind of thing. But in the end, like all of this improbability, all of this multiverse stuff, all of this stuff that's all going on, it's a lot. It's like everything in the kitchen sink. So it can kind of obscure maybe what is going on in the film at its core.
How would you describe the plot?
Doctor Strange is minding his own business and this girl shows up from a different universe within the multiverse. Her name is America Chavez, and her superpower is to create star portals by which she can go through one universe into the other universe into the other universe into the other universe. She's doing that because she's being chased by some sort of evil, and the evil that's chasing her wants to steal away her power to use it for themselves. And it turns out that that evil is Wanda Maximoff / the Scarlet Witch. So the Scarlet Witch is kind of like the evil persona or the disassociated identity of Wanda Maximoff, who is an Avenger. And that's the kind of the end result of that WandaVision miniseries that was on Disney Plus, where she's grieving the death of the Vision, her love. And in that, she has kind of imagined for herself American sitcom family kind of world to live in with her husband now alive and with two little boys. And in this film, Wanda Maximoff, now the Scarlet Witch, is seeking to find a universe in which those boys are not imaginary, but are real, where she can go and, I don't know, maybe murder her own version of herself there in order to take the place of the mother of those boys and have her boys. And she feels that America Chavez is the way to get to that. And Doctor Strange and Wong, who's now the Sorcerer Supreme, they try to help the girl stay away from the Scarlet Witch. And there's your film, basically. I mean, everything else kind of unfolds from there.
You say this is the kind of disposable film that rewards low expectations. And the more it is contemplated, the less impressive it becomes. You seldom say something about that film. What exactly do you mean by that?
Okay, so a bunch of us went and saw this film. Amongst our friends, there were some people who really wanted to see it. So we arranged to all go see it at the same time. Michelle, my wife, decided to come along. She is pretty much up to speed on everything. She'd not seen all the Spider-Man movies. We made an attempt to watch the most recent one. That failed. At any rate, she said she was really just coming along for the popcorn. That's why she came. She just wanted to have some popcorn. And she watched the film, and it's splashy, and it's like there's lots of glitz and zings and zangs and whatever else is in it. And we opted to go to the 2D, the glorious 2D version of it. We didn't want to do 3D. It was splashy and kind of exciting in the moment. But, you know, like I'm looking at it with maybe a more critical eye. But she was like, yeah, that was okay. And then there's a member from the congregation here who had not seen any Marvel movies and was basically just given the TED Talk version, like fill you in what you need to know before going to see this film. And she went and saw it separately from us. And she said, yeah, it was all right. So I think that, you know, the uncritical viewer or anybody who gets caught up in all of the Easter eggs and the little nods and winks and all the splash and dazzle of all of it, it's going to be kind of disposable fun entertainment for the moment. It does kind of, it leans into that kind of horror, zombie, genre, you know, magic, etc. kind of stuff. And there are some serious things to consider in that. But overall, it's fantastic. It's just bright and bizarre. But like we were talking about here, and like I'm saying, it's just that once you start to think about it, what does the script really look like? And what are we trying to really get at here? That's when it starts to maybe lose its center and it just becomes like a collection full of things. You can spend a lot of time looking through your junk drawer at home to find something, and there's lots of interesting things in there, but that doesn't make it a really cohesive way to store things, if that makes any sense.
Talk about this character, America Chavez. What does the viewer need to know about her in terms of just analyzing the film?
Well, I think one thing that is important, like when these Marvel movies started getting going, before Disney even owned Marvel, the company Marvel started to franchise out some of its more famous products. So they franchised out X-Men and Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four, things like that. Even some small things like Blade, the Blade series with Wesley Snipes in it as a half vampire or whatever, vampire hunter. That got franchised out, and people kind of knew the characters. So once Disney got a hold of it, and then like now all of a sudden you get like Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr., huge, right? Thor, you know, Chris Hemsworth, people know who these characters are. When you get to America Chavez as a character, like a lot of people don't know who this character is. And frankly, I didn't know who this character was. And I had to kind of look this character up. And this character is a character that was made of whole cloth in, like all of the characters really, but made back in 2011 after Disney had already acquired Marvel. So Disney acquires Marvel in 2009, something like that. And then in 2011, this America Chavez character is created for the comic books. So there's been a couple runs of the comic books, and now the character is being introduced into this film as a way to, I guess, as maybe like a commercial for, you know, where this character could go, where Disney could be going, et cetera, et cetera. And the character of America Chavez, again, like very interesting, the name America Chavez is a Latino teenage girl. You know, it's very interesting because the character is kind of, I don't know, like if you had like a focus group of people who are trying to sit down and figure out what would appeal to a young woman or a teenage girl or something, perhaps, then this might be the character that would pop up. And this is particularly the case these days. So she has, you could almost define her by what she isn't. Like the character is not white, not male, not quote unquote cisgender in her sexuality. So apparently she's supposed to be a lesbian, although that's not a big part of this film. Her parents are lesbians, so she's not part of a patriarchal family structure. And, you know, she's got this denim jacket that's got like American stars and stripes kind of on it, but it also has a pride flag badge, and it has in Spanish, amor es amor. So that means love is love, which is kind of a slogan for LGBTQ related stuff. So this is this character. And she herself, I think people need to realize in the course of the film, she herself is a MacGuffin. So a MacGuffin is essentially, like, people would be you might not be familiar with the term, but what this term is used for is things like, if you think of a movie like The Maltese Falcon. So The Maltese Falcon, the actual lead bird that everybody's trying to get their hands on, that's the MacGuffin. Or if you're thinking of something more recent, like the first of the Star Wars films, that has in it the stolen data tapes, the plans for the Death Star. That would be a MacGuffin. Or in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, the fictionalized version of the Ark of the Covenant is a MacGuffin. So there's lots of cases where, or even in these Marvel films, the Infinity Stones and then the Infinity Gauntlet that the stones go in is a MacGuffin. Everybody's trying to get the thing, because if they get the thing, they can do something with the thing. Or if they get it, then the other people don't get it. It kind of drives the plot along. And this character of America Chavez is like that. Like, you have people trying to protect her. You have other people trying to get a hold of her for their own purposes. And so it can be an object like the fictionalized Ark of the Covenant from Raiders of the Lost Ark, or it could be an actual person. In this case, America Chavez fills the bill as being kind of a MacGuffin. It's Doctor Strange is minding his own business, and then plop, this person falls in his lap, and then the story starts, essentially.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We are reviewing the movie Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. When we come back, what we've come to expect from Disney in its products and especially its movies, lots of virtue signaling.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you ever wondered why Jesus ascended into the heavens? Why does he leave his disciples behind? Why not stay here on earth and rule and govern his church here on earth? Well, if you've ever wondered this question, you need to pick up your copy of the May issue of the Lutheran Witness, where we talk about the Ascension, how to recover Ascension Day services in your own congregation, Ascension Day hymnody, and so much more. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness or visit our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas offers high school classes, in-person and remote online classes for students worldwide. The online format is for families who are seeking alternative learning options for their children or as a supplement to homeschool curriculum. Learn more at flsplano.org, a classical Lutheran education. Faith Lutheran School, Plano, Texas, flsplano.org. Ted, you say that this character, America Chavez, also does for Disney what Disney does so well, which is virtue signal. What do you mean?
Yeah, and listen, if you're going to make a completely brand new character in 2011, well, there was this guy, Hugo Chavez, who was a political leader who hated America and was a socialist. And if you could pick any Latino, like, last name, any Spanish-influenced last name, out of all of the Spanish last names, it could have been Alvarez, but they chose Chavez. And then the character herself, you know, this America Chavez, she kind of spouts off occasionally, like, socialist kind of, like, leaning comments about things. Like, for instance, our universe that we live in is, like, the only one where people have to pay for food. All of the other universes, food is free. It's all taken care of by, I don't know, whoever, the state, etc. So that's another kind of element of the whole character. And listen, you know, like Disney's kind of at a weird spot because North America, America is very polarized right now, politically, ideologically. And if they don't include representation from everything across the board, they start to look like they're picking sides. Now, as they add in all of these kinds of things, like that are all embodied in this character of America Chavez, they look like they're picking a side, right? And this can generate all sorts of heat and light all over the place online. And it's, we've talked about this at different times, you know, like when you add all of this kind of stuff in, do you even believe these things? Or are they just there to generate enough friction to get people interested in talking about your product? Because by doing that, you're going to make more money. I don't know the sincerity behind all of this all the time. It seems like Disney is doubling down on some of its beliefs when it comes to LGBTQ related things, you know, and this would be in keeping with that. There was some controversy about how some Middle Eastern countries had asked for certain scenes to be taken out of this movie, particularly the scene that involved the characters' lesbian mothers, because they didn't want to have that as part of showing the movie in their countries. But at the same time, even if you took that scene out, she's got the badge right on her denim jean jacket that's got the little pride flag on it. And this is kind of baked in. That's kind of a long answer to the thing, but this is one of those characters that virtue signals. Another kind of bizarre thing that happens in it is because it's a multiverse and there's different versions of everything, you have like this situation where the Scarlet Witch, played by Elizabeth Olsen there, she goes to this multiverse version of a different universe or whatever, and she comes in contact with variations on different characters, plus the addition of some of these Disney Marvel characters that they've reacquired now that they've purchased 20th Century Fox. So I think it's called 21st Century Fox now. So she runs into these different characters. The Scarlet Witch actually disposes of them kind of in order of their privilege. So the white male goes first and the black woman is last to go. And she kind of mows through each one of them along the way, almost like she's like working her way up a totem pole. It's really weird virtue signaling, but it's certainly kind of all there in the mix as you're watching the film.
You say that the character, America Chavez, is intended to operate as an audience surrogate. What does that mean, and do they succeed?
Well, I think that it certainly would succeed if you share the same ideological and political ideas as the character. Then it would be slam dunk operating as a audience surrogate, which means that the character does the things you would do, says the things you would say, asks the questions you would ask, and maybe on the fantasy end of it, because it's superheroes and things, does the things you would like to do if you had the powers that she had, sort of a thing, right? On the other hand, I guess, if you did not share that same ideological or political point of view about things, perhaps then the character of America Chavez is intended to woo you towards thinking those things or believing those things or seeing yourself in that character, I guess. Is it super successful in that way? I don't know. Time's going to tell on that. The one thing that just, oh, man, chaps me so much. So, and I mentioned that in here, is that there's this moment, because she's a character who she can't control her powers. The powers only work when she's frightened, and she needs to learn how to control her powers, et cetera, and they're dangerous, et cetera. And you know how she gets to the point where she can control her powers and everything is okay? She needs a little pep talk from Doctor Strange, and he tells her, trust yourself and trust in your powers. That's the only way you can beat the Scarlet Witch. And it's like, trust yourself and trust your powers is like, just again, like my eyes roll into the back of my head when I hear that. The number of times where that is the answer for some character in some movie that needs to like rise to the occasion. Wow. It's breathtaking. And it's kind of one of those things that's just like, brings the record needle to a stop or just like hits the brakes on the whole thing. For me personally, when I'm watching a movie and I hear that, because it's so it's the worst advice ever. And it's always presented as the best of advice.
You say that there are also two other MacGuffins in this film besides that character we've discussed here, America Chavez.
Yeah, the one is this, there are two magical books. So there's a bad magical book and a good magical book. And dear listener, you know that all magical books are bad magical books. Anyways, in the course of the film, there's one called The Darkhold, which corrupted Wanda Maximoff and turned her into the Scarlet Witch. And there's another one called The Book of Vishanti, which is supposed to be kind of a cure-all book. And if you've got that book, you can do whatever you need to do to save the day, etc., etc. The second book, The Book of Vishanti, is a bit of a red herring, but once Doctor Strange gets it, it just kind of dissolves. There's nothing there. So he ends up having to use the bad book, The Darkhold. This is kind of a fire fighting fire kind of a scenario. That's why he does it, but it exacts a terrible toll on the user, basically setting it up for him to become something of a villain himself. He's already encountered villain versions of himself in the multiverse, and here he's, you know, set himself up to be corrupted, but there's this hubris that says, oh, this time it's not going to go bad. This time I'm going to be able to do it. I can do it where other people have failed. And these are the two other kind of MacGuffins in the course of the film.
What do you mean when you talk about the cul-de-sacs in this film?
Well, a cul-de-sac is like, it's not a through road, right? Like it's not even a T. You know, if you're driving around a town and you get to a cul-de-sac, you go in, you're driving around a circle and you come back out. There's nowhere to go in it. So essentially the whole film feels like a cul-de-sac. Like you just kind of go into this film, go around in a couple circles and come back out. And there's two things that are kind of weird about it. First thing is that the stakes are very high. It's like, not only is it just the world that can be destroyed or the universe that could be destroyed, now it's all universes everywhere could be destroyed. So now they've raised I don't know where you go from that. Like they've raised the stakes so incredibly high as to almost not matter. And in the end of the day, it's another day in the life of Doctor Strange and we carry on kind of thing. Maybe he's learned a couple lessons and he's not as, you know, as arrogant as he was before, but that's it. Like it doesn't feel like it's getting anybody anywhere in terms of the whole story. And I think this is one of the problems with this is that if you're looking for any kind of continuity, it's very weak. It's all falling apart. It's like a sandcastle that's about to get rained on or cotton candy or something. It's just, it's not solid enough. And whoever is like putting this all together is not like watching carefully all the other films and building a very succinct, careful story here. So it sort of doesn't matter. You just go into the movie, you experience the movie like a roller coaster ride, you get off and you go on to the next thing, whatever it might be.
With about a minute, what are your pastoral concerns on this film?
It is all, like I've said, like cotton candy and like it's entertaining and flashy and, you know, fun to look at for the moment. But I would say that some of the things that people need to keep in mind, like I said, you know, like good magic versus bad magic. They say, you know, like, oh, this is sorcery and this is witchcraft and witchcraft is bad. It's like, listen, this is all bad stuff. So just because it's like all presented as fun and glitzy and flashy, the Christian should remember that scripture says don't get involved in these things. And one thing not to get involved in is necromancy. And one of the plot points in the film is this kind of zombie version of Doctor Strange, where from a distance, he kind of marionettes the zombie version of himself to try to help fix the day. And, you know, like this is like the reanimation of a dead body. Here we are in the season of Easter. Jesus is not some sort of zombie corpse that's been like marionetted out of the tomb. That's not the way any of that works. So keep all of that stuff in mind that, you know, like there's even this little moment where Doctor Strange at a wedding reception turns water into wine. This is not a movie that's super kind to your Christian faith. And some of the concepts at the root of these films, like the multiverse and some of these other things, it's getting into murky water when it comes to what we believe about how the universe operates. This gets into the area of cosmology. So just remember what you believe about what the world is like, the universe and how God created it is like, and disregard a bunch of this stuff, and also don't fall for the kind of, I don't know, just the little hook that says that this stuff is fun or that there's any sort of like anything worth having in your life when it comes to anything weird and occult or strange out there in the actual world that you actually live in.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's movie reviews at issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
We will discuss the gifts that Christ gives in his ascension with Dr. Thomas Winger of Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary right after the break.
They've met with the pastor week after week. He's taught them our precepts and Christ Jesus to seek. He shared the law of our God, which we strive to keep, the prayers, the creeds, and the sacraments deep. Now these young saints are right to partake in Christ's body and blood, all for his sake. A gift you are seeking to commemorate this? Ad Crucem has just what you won't want to miss. We've got icons, art, ornaments, jewelry, and more, greeting cards, crucifixes, posters, gifts galore. Your catechized friend will love what you give and treasure the gift all the days that they live.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's Fables and classic children's literature, math, and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.